Christians from different parts of the world with us on the same class. And I was the only Scotsman. In fact, I had to explain to some of these guys where, in the nitty-gritty, where Scotland even was, because they didn't have a clue. And one of my colleagues was from Moldova, and Vadim Stouchen, and he was just doing the same course, fully persuaded that he too was called into mission work or into the pulpit. So anyway, cut a long story short, one Friday afternoon I was having a cup of coffee and he asked me if I would do him a favour. And I said, yeah, no problem. He says, what's the favour? Will you drive me a bus? No problem, I said. Where in London do you want me to drive you a bus? He says, not London, he says, Russia. And I says, what? You know, his church over in Moldova had been gifted with a bus, a second-hand bus by a church in London. And he didn't have the because of, you know, lies and driving regulations. He didn't have he couldn't take it over himself, so he asked me if I would take the bus over. So after a few moments, I had said yes, so I thought I better fulfill my pledge. So anyway, I drove, I think before we got all the paperwork drawn up, a few weeks later, I still remember, 1,891 miles from the moment we left London LTS. We went to six countries: France, Belgium, Germany, Austria, Hungary, Romania, and then until we reached Moldova. And it took 6 days. We slept in the vehicle during these nights, you know. So that was my beginnings with Moldova, and that was over in 2000, August 2003. And on that journey, I took all the lads that were studying at LTS back home. Some of them I had to drop off in Austria, some in Hungary, some in Romania, and there was two that I eventually dropped off in Moldova. So I by God's grace, we did have lots of problems then at the borders of both Romania and also on the Moldovan side. They were more stricter than they were then. But we overcome, with God's help, these problems, and we got the bus safely, and they used the bus, I think, for 12 years. The bus is now gone, but that was my first sort of links with the country, yeah.
Now, can you give a brief background of the country and location?
Moldova. The only thing I knew about Moldova before then was I heard Blythewood speaking about this country in great needs. So the name registered with me, and of course became interested when I heard, you know, of lads from that country, and sitting beside them and studying beside them. And I went eventually over to Moldova. Some of you may know where it is. It's sandwiched between the Ukraine and Romania, literally sandwiched. It's squeezed in between these countries. And it has a population, now this is quite staggering, it has a population of 4.5 million people. But at any given one time, there's 1 million people outside the country looking for work in different parts of the world. And I've met some of them even here in Scotland. There's such poverty in the country. It's still regarded as it was until last year, the poorest country in Eastern Europe. But it's been overcome. It's been Ukraine has taken over because of the civil war, or at least the problems that had been at the borders of Russia and Ukraine over the last 2 years. So Ukraine is poverty-wise in a worse state than Moldova is, but in saying that, it's a poor country, and the average, it so happened that I took a few pennies with me. It ended up in my their currency is lei. So this is a 100 lei note, and it's worth, I think it's £4.50. So you can imagine the thousands upon thousands, literally, of lei notes are exchanged there every day of life. It's 22 times, as I think, more than our pound in value. Did I say that? I think I did, you know. So that's a brief, you know, it is the poorest country in Europe, and the average wage, I think, is £50 a month, $60 to $70 a month. It's not the poorest country in the world by any means, but it is the poorest country in Europe.
Now, what has led to your continuing interest in the country?
I went over there first in 2003, and I've been going over there every 2 years since then. Actually, I was over a few weeks ago, my last visit. I was there from the 15th to the 25th of May. I skied the assembly this year, so I'll probably be reprimanded over the next few weeks. So I've been going over every 2 years. Now, the main reason, in one sense, I did get on with I've been staying and working with the pastor of the church in Kabul. My interests are in the south of the country, in the southwest, a place called Kabul. It has a population of 35,000 people. And I've been staying with the pastor there and his family ever since we made contact way back in 2003. And I suppose it's the hunger that they have for God's word. Even in the congregation there in Kabul, I've seen nothing but an increase since I went there first in 2003. I still remember in 2003 when I went there, there was 30. A couple of weeks ago, when I was at the prayer meeting, there were 70 people at the prayer meeting, and there was between 100 and 140 at the services on the Lord's Day on Sunday. So they do have an appetite for God's word. And, you know, they think that we've lost the plot, rightly so, because of our liberal theology. There's desperate lack of teaching amongst their pastors, because they don't have the colleges and the seminaries that we have where we can train our men for the ministry. They have to have a tent-making job. Now, the pastor that I'm associated with, he's got thousands, probably millions of bees, you know, so he produces honey which he sells to Moldova. So that's his only source of income. You know, they're not there dependent upon the plate to pay for their salary, as ministers are in this country. Now, the walls of communism came down in the country in 1991. It became an independent country, and there was very, very few churches there at that time. But 2 years later, in 1993, that was in 2 years, there was 140 evangelical gospel churches. Until the end of last year, 2017, that had gone up to 720. So you can imagine 720 gospel in these, it's gone up to that number. So they do have an appetite for God's word, a hunger. Now, so we complain sometimes about, you know, a service maybe being in for an hour. And these services, you know, they're main church services. They meet at 9 o'clock. Some of these people have had to travel 3 hours by bike. Some of them had to walk to get the service for 9 o'clock in the morning, and the service lasts 3 hours. Nobody, the children, none of the children walk out. They're all there with their mums and their dads, and the women sit on one side, and the men sit on the other side, you know, and maybe two men will lead the services preaching from the word. you can ask, you can come back. I could say many things, but there's so many things that you can ask questions afterwards.
Is it true that many Christians have suffered there for their faith in the past?
Okay, we've all probably read the books of Richard Wurmbrand, the Romanian pastor. And I think all of us, I still remember reading his book, and I'm being moved by this man's life and his dedication and the sacrifices that he made for the gospel. You know, they're faithful, if I can, you know, say it like this. They lack teaching in many ways, and we would question sometimes the way that, you know, the way they present their doctrine. But they're faithful, I have to say, with the life that they have. And there's no lightheartedness or, you know, they cannot understand how the Christian church embraces same-sex marriage. They just cannot, for the life of them in this country, you know, and approve of some of these things that are an abomination in God's word. The equivalent of Richard Wurmbrand was a man called Michel Horner. And you remember the book that maybe I've been circulating, some of you have read, A Small Price to Pay. Now, this man spent 15 years in prison as well, and I was in that gentleman's company over the last few years, at least until he passed away in 2012, and I saw the masks that he had on his own body, and he suffered excruciating pain, as many of his colleagues did, because, you know, they were faithful in their ministry in the underground church. And the Orthodox Church is no friend of Christianity over there. It is no friend, it is not a friend of anything to do with the gospel. It is not a friend of evangelicalism. And probably you're wondering, when you see some of these pictures that have appeared in my newsletter of these huge, fancy Orthodox churches, the answer is simple: the money comes from the government. They're hand in hand, the secret police, the state, and the Orthodox Church. And you know, they believe everything, but the gospel. And in these early days, my understanding is that they had lots of problems because of Orthodox preacher, the Orthodox priests, and the Orthodox strand of government opposing these buildings that were being erected all over the country. But, you know, they failed miserably at the end of the day. And they call them houses of prayer, and houses of prayer are now, you know, scattered all over the country. So Michel Horev suffered for simple two reasons. It was under Stalin's reign, and they wanted two things: to silence the evangelical church and get rid of Christianity. And many of the churches that he represented, or the denomination, they were all burnt to the ground. I think maybe 9 out of 10 of them. That's what he told me. So it was interesting listening to that man. And yet he was asked at the end of the day to write a book, you know, about all that he went through, his sufferings and, you know, the sacrifice, and he called the book. He was invited to give a title to the book, and that's a humbling title, A Small Price, he says, to pay for standing on the side of Christ. You know, so many Christians did in these days before the walls of communism collapsed, came crumbling down in 1991. They suffered greatly for that.
Can you tell us something about the House of Prayer project?
House of Prayer project, amongst one of the 700. In many of these rural settings, the pastor in Cahul, the man that I mentioned, he's got his own church, but he's also looking after other churches as well, here and there, and he travels many miles a year. You know, we may be doing a lot of travelling, maybe 16,000 a year, but he does 40,000 a year travelling to reach some of these rural areas with the gospel. And many of these small groupings, they meet in houses, you know, and needless to say, some of their houses, you couldn't really throw a cat, you know, fly a cat in them. They're so small. And yet, their hunger for God's word is that they meet, they were meeting there during the week and on the Lord's day. You know, so when I sort of, you know, went over first and I saw some of these group settings and saw how sincere and earnest and fervent they were even in reaching out with the gospel, I thought the least I can do is maybe help them get a building of their own. And with the support of various people from here to Timbuktu, we managed to raise enough money to build a new house of prayer in a place called Borgi Moldoveni, a village of 3,000 people. A house of prayer, I have to say, that is well utilized now. And the other house of prayer was to the northwest, maybe an hour to the northwest, in a place called Lova. And it was a small house that came up for sale, but they found it sufficient, you know, to accommodate their needs, you know, to become a house of prayer, you know. So that's how these houses of prayer came into the equation. You know, a lot of people put their hands into their pockets, and some of you may have been, some of you I know did as well, you know, and they're always appreciative, you know, for the support that has been given them to reach out with the gospel, which they do as well regularly and faithfully. Yeah.
Now, no, it's okay, I'm just focusing here. What is the story of the widowed mother and her 8 children, which you have mentioned in your newsletter?
Okay. Yeah, you've been following maybe the sad story of Katerina Giob. Katerina and Vasily, her husband, were both members of the church in Kahul. And at the end of 2011, beginning of 2012, he was diagnosed with cancer. And he died within a short space of time. He was only 48, and he left a family of 8. Now, I had spent up until then, since I first went over to Moldova, since I took an interest, I was in and out of their shed. It was literally a shed where they were trying to bring up a family of 8. Now, this man, Vasily, he was a bright Christian. He was their deacon, he was their treasurer, and he left a remarkable testimony behind him on his deathbed, which was in the main hospital in Chisinau. And various reports came back to the pastor of how this man, with a wife, with 8 children, at prayer at night, he got the men and women in the wards together for worship and praying that the Lord's will be done for him. Not that his life would be, that he would be healed, but that the Lord's will, God's will would be done in his life. And the Lord wasn't pleased for his own purposes to restore him to health and to strength, and he passed away, and he left a widow also, 48, and 8 children. And my heart went out to them, as did the hearts of many people, you know. And shortly after Vasily's passing, we decided to build them a new home. And she herself, Catherine, she's a lovely Christian lady, respected in the community, and her children, without exception, hold her in high esteem. And it's wonderful in the home how they have a routine for everything, and they do their own bit every day. And last year, the oldest son, Pavel, he made a public profession of his faith. He's 18. And well-mannered children, 5 boys and 3 girls, and apparently their home is a blessing. And many in the community, I am told, couldn't understand in seeing how little that they had in this world, and then all of a sudden, within 2 years, seeing a new building and a new home for them to accommodate all their needs. Who were they depending on? And of course, her motto was that God was the one who provided all things for her, you know. So, a remarkable woman and a remarkable family, and God's blessing is upon that family, and it's quite evident. And some people have obviously donated specifically for their needs, and I continue to designate these funds, you know, to meet their needs as and when, you know, these needs arise.
Right, you'll get an opportunity to ask questions yourselves in a moment. But, Donald, is there any memorable event or story that you're able to share with us at this time?
How long do I have?
2 minutes.
Many. There are many treasured moments I have. I suppose I have one from this latest trip, and I have one from the last trip I was on 2 years ago. The last time I was out, I became friendly with a brother from the Brethren Assembly. And they have a small assembly fellowship group in Cahul, where my interests are. And he, of course, heard that I was in the vicinity. Would I go and help him? And I says, what kind of help do you want? Preach, he says, in the school campus. He says, next Tuesday, he says, I've got 60. He says, kids between 16 and 24 in the campus. I preach to them every week. He says, you're going to be preaching to them next week. You've got an hour. They're from an Orthodox background. Never heard the truth. The Oxford Orthodox Church. He says, you preach. You don't preach anything, he says, but the truths of God's word. You preach heaven. You preach hell. You preach sin. You preach justification by faith. And I thought, all these words are familiar to me. So I had the liberty of speaking to these students for an hour about all these doctrines that they would frown at if I was to go into any school or any campus in this country. And you had the freedom, and it was quite astonishing, the response of these. They had an app. They wanted Bibles. They wanted booklets. One of the booklets that's popular actually over there is this booklet. It won't make any sense to you. It's a booklet written by Maurice Roberts, believe it or not. It's the booklet. It's been translated into Russian. How can we know God? And I think 1,000 of these booklets I left with them when I was over there recently, because they're always looking for literature. They're craving for Bibles. A large quantity of Bibles went over as well. But that was a memorable evening, you know, to hear some. He also asked me to give a word of questions, a word of testimony, and then they were invited to ask questions following my testimony, which I tell you they did, and they did thoroughly. And they wanted more of these booklets that I had referred to, and they had searching questions upon over some of these doctrines of heaven and hell in the Bible. So it was quite astonishing. So it was a memorable evening for me. Another memorable moment this year was we did outreach in a certain rural village. We were going out with literature, various items of literature and booklets, and we came to this house, an old Calioch and an old Buttock. They would have been maybe in the late 70s. And these people, with the little that they have, oh, they're exceedingly generous. Their hospitality is quite amazing, in the sense of, you know, I always tell people there's going to be a famine in Europe. You know, these people in Moldova, I tell you, would survive, and all of us would starve because we're dependent upon what Tesco and Morrison's and Asda have to. These people are, you know, the little that they have, they've got resources in the ground. The ground produces everything, carrots, onions, turnips, fruit, you know, and May is the time of the year for cherries and strawberries, and you could spend, you know, it was incredible. They told us you can eat as much as you can from this cherry tree. And hospitality, it was incredible. So anyway, that wasn't really the reason we went through their gate, but to find out, did they have an appetite for the things of God? They did have, but they never read a Bible, for the simple reason the Orthodox priest had said to them, the Bible is for the priest. So the way she put it, did they have a Bible? A Bible is to be held by the priest. A Bible is to be opened by the priest. A Bible is to be explained by the priest. We're not allowed to read the Bible. So they had never had a Bible. They had never read a Bible. And I said, well, that's coming to an end. I said, you're going to get a free Bible tomorrow. So we went back the following day with a brand new Bible in Romania. And I tell you, you know, I read that day, I went over to Moldova with an English footballer earning £391,000 a week, plus a £75,000 fee for every match, and £1 million he receives every year for a signing on fee. I tell you, that Bible was more to them than all this world's gold. It meant so much to them. They asked, where are we to start reading? Where do you point? Where do you tell somebody? John 3, verses 1 to 20. So they asked, why John 3, 1 to 20? So we gave them a short summary of what that passage meant. So that was a very treasured moment with that couple that will live on forever, for as long as I live here.
Well, folks, have you any right to ask Donald John about Moldova? Yes, Bruce.
Was there a blind girl that she lost her sight or something?
Yeah, it's a sad story in one sense, although she died well. That girl that I made reference to from Moldova was eventually transferred to Czechoslovakia for the simple reason her uncle was living in Czechoslovakia and they didn't have the facilities in Moldova to look after her cancer needs. They did everything in their power in Czechoslovakia and there was sort of light at the end of the tunnel, but it was only brief, sadly, for a month, and her condition deteriorated to the extent, you know, that she passed away. But you probably read, some of you, the word of testimony that she left and which I printed in one of the newsletters. She was a Christian girl. Her mum was devoted to her. Her mum and dad sadly separated, sadly in Moldova, as in this country. Many people are hooked on drink. Vodka is their drink, as it is whiskey in this country. So mum and dad had separated was because of his drinking, excessive drinking. And it affected the girl deeply. She couldn't understand why mum and dad had to separate, and it affected her deeply. Her mum was looked after, devoted, but her mum was not a Christian. And this young girl, Michaela, I think was her name, she was troubled about this, and with her life ebbing away, she wasn't concerned about her own destiny, but pressing it upon her mother to make sure that she was at peace with God before she entered this world.
Mr. Haran.
Yes. The Bibles you think, what languages?
Sorry, I should have said that at the beginning. There's two languages really on the east side, which is nearer Ukraine and Russia. It's the Russian language, and on the other side, it's the Romanian language. So when they're looking for literature, it's always 50-50.
Okay.
You know, yeah. Although a lot of the children have both languages, and they're introducing English as well. The younger generation, a lot of them have English, you know, but they can't speak both Russian and Romania, you know. Yeah.
Thomas Keddy was asking a question. Oh, you were asking the same question.
Yes.
Two great minds think alike.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
Yes, sorry, thank you for that.
They're content with the new mission, the house of prayer that was newly built. the second house of prayer that was bought to be in use as a house of prayer is caving in. So I sort of, they won me over again, you know. So I'm in the process of raising money for a new house of prayer. In this country, a house of prayer like that would cost around £200,000 plus. Over there, they can build it for £30,000. I'm only back for a fortnight. Half of it has been actually raised already. So there'll be something going here to the next newsletter.
Well, time's gone on. And before you do